Here it is!
From deep inside your audio device of choice.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, a very big week behind us. The felon-in-chief, the president, has taken it upon himself in an executive order to honor that which Congress has not declared since World War II. That is to say, war. He announced a change, which is not official because it can't be unless Congress says it is, from the Department of Defense to the Department of War. It's, you know, in line with this whole kind of super macho thing that the Republican Party has been favoring over the last decade or two. And I'm in receipt of kind of private information, I guess, not yet released to the general public, indicating they've had second thoughts already at the White House about the renaming. They want it to sound even tougher, it turns out. And so they are going to be renaming the War Department this coming week as the Hulk Hogan Department. Hello, welcome to the show. From the home of the homeless, Santa Monica, California. Think of it. Well, don't think of it. I'm Harry Shearer. Welcome you to this edition of the show. And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of our friend the atom.
Clean, safe, too cheap to meet. Save, cheap, too cheap to meet. Cheap, save, too safe to meet. Save, save, too safe to meet.
Well, it's apparently not too cheap to meter. This from the Japanese newspaper Asahi Shimbun. Costs for safety measures by 11 power companies in Japan to restart their idle nuclear reactors nationwide in the aftermath of the Fouk disaster, those costs have ballooned to $43.98 billion. Safety measures. It's according to a survey by the newspaper. Expenses, they say, tend to rise significantly during the final security screening process for bringing reactors back online. Well, you could just not. Total expenditures are expected to continue spiking dramatically from here on out, given that 8 reactors are currently undergoing the particularly difficult safety checks process. Why, but they're sick. The cost advantage afforded by nuclear power generation over other forms of power generation has been undermined following the accident at Fouk that prompted a novel financing system to be instituted to shift the growing burden of safety countermeasures onto the public on a broad scale. Well, the public is a... The Asahi Shimbun has been conducting a survey for the last 12 years, asking 11 power companies across Japan how much they invest in precautionary measures. The utilities are obliged to implement safeguards in their facilities against quakes, tsunami, and other emergencies. That's under new regulatory standards adopted since the Fouk thing. In safety spending research conducted in July this year, one electric power company, Hokkaido, logged a year-on-year increase of $3 billion for safety stuff. This pushed the total budget for the 11 nuclear corporations to at least $44 billion. That's 6.5 times the estimate way back in 2013. Hokkaido Electric, with an eye towards resuming operations at its reactor at the Tomari power plant in Hokkaido a couple of years from now, completed the main phase of the reactor security review last month. No, sorry, July. We're in September now. About $44.2 billion is expected to be required to install security equipment, like your high barriers to block tsunami waves. Why didn't I think of the total budget for the 3 reactors at that Tomari plant? Estimated originally at $407 million back in 2013. New figure means expenditures for one reactor alone have soared more than tenfold from the earliest prediction. Anti-disaster spending, the paper points out, tends to increase even more sharply when detailed designs of relevant facilities are finalized. That's toward the end of safety screening. When? Who cares, right? And this from Washington. The Trump administration, you've heard of it, is more willing to support loan guarantees and tax breaks for nuclear power than for wind and solar because it is, quote, more American than those forms of energy. That's from the director of the U.S. Energy Dominance Council, said this week. I didn't know we had a Dominance Council. Jared Agin said nuclear power is more likely to be made from U.S.-made parts than wind and solar farms, so the administration is more willing to give it financial aid from the U.S. Loan Programs Office and support tax incentives. Quote, nuclear is new. Nice. And then we need to invest in it to get ahead. And it's the long-term play that the president wants to put in place. He said that at an event for the Center for Strategic and International Studies. He continued, it hasn't had the proper kind of investment. It hasn't had the focus that some of the other intermittent energy sources have had, meaning wind and solar. Companies at the forefront of building nuclear reactors are American companies, he added. Don't tell that to the Japanese. Clean, cheap, safe to meter our friend the atom. And now, ladies and gentlemen, even more encouraging news of the warm. I think I will.
Soft, listen to the warm. We can listen to the warm.
The planet's capacity to store carbon dioxide emissions in rock formations is much smaller than previous estimates suggest. It could run out as early as 2200. That's according to a study published this week in Nature, nature.com. to meet the goal of the Paris Agreement agreed to in 2015, limiting global warming to 1.5 to 2 degrees above pre-industrial temperatures. Vast amounts of CO2 will need to be removed from the atmosphere. One way to do that is to capture CO2 produced by industry and store it deep underground. Researchers report that Earth can safely store around 460 gigatons of carbon dioxide. That's a number much lower than the 10,000 to 40,000 gigatons often cited in previous studies. At present, carbon capture and storage technologies remove only 49 million tons of CO2 annually, a further 416 million tons per year in planned capacity, like in the future, wherever that may be. That's according to authors of the study, but to stay within the Paris target, annual carbon storage would need to rise to 8.7 gigatons of CO2 by mid-century. That is a 175-fold increase over the next three decades. Oh, but look, it may seem like fall to you and me, but it's a crypto winter. Decentralized trading platform Bunny, B-U-N-N-I, Bunny, Bunny, lost about $8.4 million worth of funds due to an exploit. Roughly $6 million drained on Unichain and $2.4 million on Ethereum. That's according to an on-chain security firm this week. The exploit, I think that means theft, targeted security vulnerability in Bunny's Ethereum-based smart contracts. I'm loving those smart contracts. They're so smart. The specific techniques used by the attackers have not been fully reported, but half of the haul was swapped to Ether, not the gas, the cryptocurrency, and bridged to Ethereum. Quote, if you have money on Bunny, remove it ASAP, wrote one user, a core contributor at Bunny. And the crypto industry closed August with another grim milestone. Security exploits are rising. So are the losses, according to CCN.com. That quotes data from the blockchain security firm PeckShield. 16 major exploits drained $163.2 million from exchanges, platforms, and individual users. Congratulations, kids. That's a 15% jump from July's $142 million bunch of losses. The steady escalation underscores a troubling trend in 2025, according to CCN. Despite ongoing investments in defense mechanisms, crypto remains fertile ground for increasingly sophisticated attackers. I'd cancel their subscriptions to Vogue, I guess, would be the largest single incident in August wasn't at a crypto exchange, an exploit there, but a devastating social engineering scam. One Bitcoin holder was tricked into transferring 783 Bitcoins worth $91.4 million after falling for attackers posing as support staff from a trading platform and hardware wallet provider. That's what I want to be when I grow up. These scammers convinced the victim to surrender access credentials and approve the transfer, marking one of the largest personal losses in crypto history. But wait. Exchanges weren't spared either. Turkey's BTC Turk suffered its second major crypto exploit in just over a year, losing $54 million in August after a $54 million hack June of last year. With more than $100 million gone in back-to-back incidents, the exchange faces mounting questions about its ability to secure customer funds. Well, but Trump's making money. Other notable exploits included DeFi protocols, Odin Fun, $7 million, BetterBank.io, $5 million, and CreditX Finance, $4.5 million. Maybe if they spend more money on security and less on coming up with funny names, nah, it's still a crypto winner. And now this from the Guardian newspaper, a plan circulating in the White House, that's in this country, to develop the Gaza Riviera, a string of high-tech megacities That plan has been dismissed as an insane attempt to provide cover for the large-scale ethnic cleansing of the Palestinian territory's population of Palestinians. This week, the Washington Post published a leaked prospectus for the plan, which would involve the forced displacement of Gaza's entire population of 2 million and put the territory into a U.S. trusteeship for at least a decade. Well, if you can't trust the U.S., name the Gaza Reconstruction Economic Acceleration and Transformation Trust, or GREAT. The proposal, I guess they couldn't figure out a way to spell out beautiful. The proposal was reportedly developed by some of the same Israelis who created and set in motion the U.S. and Israeli-backed Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, planning, financial planning at least, contributed by Boston Consulting Group. Most controversially, the 38-page plan suggests what it calls, quote, temporary relocation of all of Gaza's more than 2 million population, unquote, a proposal that would amount to ethnic cleansing. Some call it a genocidal act. Palestinians would be encouraged into voluntary departure to another country, name one, or into restricted secure zones during reconstruction. Those who own land would be offered a digital token, maybe a Trump coin, in exchange for rights to develop their property again, or to be used to finance a new life elsewhere. I like elsewhere. It's very calm there. Those who would stay would be housed in properties with a footprint of 323 square feet, minuscule even by the standards of many non-refugee camp homes now in Gaza. Not clear if the plan reflects U.S. policy. Neither the White House nor the State Department responded to the Washington Post request for comment. The prospectus seems to reflect the president's previously stated ambition to, quote, clean out, unquote, Gaza and redevelop it. Even in the Israeli media, the proposal invited incredulity. A column in the Haaretz newspaper described it as, quote, a Trumpian get-rich-quick scheme reliant on war crimes, AI, and tourism, unquote. That's a good recipe, I think. The prospectus appears to have been drawn up by people with no physical knowledge of Gaza, the politics of the Middle East, or the likely challenges in attempting to rebuild the territory as a multi-billion dollar tourism and technology hub, according to The Guardian. The scheme is described as requiring no U.S. funding. Okay, let's do it. And is intended to be funded by investors to the tune of $100 billion. It envisages a bustling port city bisected by a watercourse and bordered by up to 8 leafy AI-powered high-tech megacities. Those are apparently modeled after Saudi Arabia's Troubled Gnome project. Well, modeling after a troubled project seems like it could... It also envisages an Elon Musk manufacturing park located on the ruins of the Erez industrial zone, which was built with Israeli investment to employ cheap labor in the Palestinian territory and then closed and destroyed by Israeli forces. Says The Guardian, the entire language in the prospectus and labeling of several features appears aimed at appealing to the vanity of Trump, Musk, in Saudi Arabia's Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, for whom the security ring around Gaza would be named. The prospectus was leaked days after the felon Trump held a White House meeting to discuss day after planning for Gaza, attended by former Prime Minister of Britain Tony Blair. He has contributed views on Gaza's future to the Trump administration and Trump's son-in-law Jared. They all make money off it, don't they? But it sounds something like this.
Everything's up to date in Gaza City. They've gone about as far as they can go. A dozen sky-high towers have just replaced the huts. The changes have been anything but slow. We got rid of all the Palestinians. Sent them out where nothing's known to grow. Hotels and casinos spread across the land. You can buy a spiffy house there for 700 grand. While all the former residents are free to sleep on sand, we've sent them out as far as they can go. We've sent them out as far as they can go. There's a new technology hub in Gaza City. It doesn't do much work, it's just for show. Everyone speaks English like it's supposed to be, and no one reaps cause no one has to sow. Tourists fall in love with Gaza City. It's built for them wherever they may go. There's a hulking data center where olive trees once grew, a lovely lack of history at the Museum of the New, and an occupying army just to see it all go through. It's gone about as far as it can go. It's gone about as far as it can go.
And now, ladies and gentlemen,
looks like
well, this week, another thing happened. Elon Musk published a new master plan for Tesla. Published it not as a PDF or any kind of document, as social media tweets on his platform. They're not tweets, of course. It's the fourth such document for Tesla, replacing the goals Musk offered in 2023 when he said the company would sell 20 million electric vehicles a year 5 years from now. This time, it's not entirely sure what Tesla's plan actually entails, according to Ars Technica. The text, which reads at times as though it was written by AI, is free of specifics. And each iteration of the master plan is Tesla's North Star, the new plan says, promising, quote, to deliver unconstrained sustainability without compromise, unquote. Now, you could take that to the... Now, quote, we are combining our manufacturing capabilities with our autonomous prowess to deliver new products and services that will accelerate global prosperity and human thriving, driven by economic growth shared by all, says the plan. No mention of needing to go to Mars to make that happen. This interesting statement, considering each time Tesla has tried to build a new model, the result has been months and months of production difficulties, not to mention the multiple federal safety investigations into the company's autonomous, partially automated driving systems. Tesla also has disbanded the team building its Dojo supercomputer. That happened several weeks ago, much touted by Musk in the past as the key to beating autonomous vehicle developers like Waymo. Tesla will no longer rely on its in-house resource, instead relying on external companies, according to Bloomberg. Quote, shortages in resources can be remedied by improved technology, greater innovation, and new ideas, says the plan. And Martians coming here would... The plan visioned the corporate buzzwords, statements like, our desire to push beyond what is considered achievable will foster the growth needed for truly sustainable abundance, unquote. There's very little mention of Tesla electric vehicles, other than brief mention of autonomous vehicles, but quite a bit of text devoted to the company's humanoid robot. Quote, jobs and tasks that are particularly monotonous or dangerous cannot be accomplished by other means. So, industrial robots would be turned into bipedal humanoid bodies. But robot arms, Ars Technica points out, robot arms mounted to the floor don't need to worry about balance, nor do quadruped robots with wheels. But, you know, that'll be in the next master plan. News of Musk love.
Do you remember? 21st night of September, love was changing the mind of this pretender while chasing the clouds away. Our hearts were ringing in the key that our souls were singing. I as we danced in the moonlight. Stars stole the night away. In September, and dance the night away. Dance the night away. Thoughts are with you, holding hands with your heart, but to see you, only blue talk in your December's. Remember when love was here to stay. Dancing in September, dance the night away. Dance the night away. September, love was changing the mind of this pretender, chasing the clouds away. Dancing in September, dance the clouds away. Dance the night away. Thank you.
direct from the most beautiful golf course this side of Scotland. This is the healthiest president ever elected for a third term, with another edition of Truth Social Audio, brought to you by Trump Underwear. Briefs even a lawyer would love. A lot of people, most of them morons or crackheads, are critical of my use of the word hoax to describe everything from the Russia hoax to the Jeffrey, what's his name, hoax. What they don't know is that I have the history to know the difference between a real hoax and a hoax hoax. Take the Miss Universe contest. I sure did. As everybody but the mentally bankrupt Democrats knows, I used to own that contest. The fake media, which was even more fake back then, used to say it was fixed or rigged. But I knew from personal experience that these were some of the hardest working girls in the universe. They would spend hours and hours each day not eating. The brain-dead Democrats should try that sometimes. Pocahontas, just for one, would look half as frightening if she didn't just tip the scale but actually break it. It was no hoax each year for the Miss Universe finals to have to fly halfway around the world to some city that thought sidewalks were a luxury and garbage cans were for losers. And yet brain-dead so-called critics kept saying the competition was fixed. What these extremely sick lunatics didn't realize is I could have made a lot more money off the contest if it was rigged, just, let's say, by picking Miss Saudi Arabia, even as first runner-up. I did get to meet all the contestants up close and personal, as they used to say in the Crooked News. Believe me when I say those bodies were no hoax. Very often when I was busy with some fantastic real estate deal I was making, my daughter Ivanka would be my stand-in at those fiercely judged competitions. But I always welcomed her back home with open hands. As the new House Republican Committee will discover soon enough, if they know which side of their primary bread is buttered, if the 2020 election had been run as well, as clean, as unrigged as the Miss Universe contests, there never would have been a Ukraine war. And we never had to send the great American troops to keep the contests from becoming a network death camp. Thank you for your attention to this matter and to all the matters. Stay loyal.
Truth Social Audio is also brought to you by Trump Toothpaste, because white is always right. So long. This is Le Show, and now, news of AI. Just because
AI's great, just first rate, love or hate, it's the gold state. AI is fine, like a well-aged wine, more like rhyme than turpentine.
Google's CEO Sundar Pichai stood smiling in a leafy green California garden 5 years ago, declared that the company was entering its most ambitious decade yet in its climate action. Said he knew the road ahead would not be easy, but Google aimed to prove that a carbon-free future is both possible and achievable fast enough to prevent the most dangerous impacts of climate change. 5 years on, well, Google's sustainability website proudly boasted a headline pledge to achieve net zero emissions by 2030. By July, that all changed. This is according to Canada's National Observer. An investigation by them found that Google's net zero pledge has quietly been scrubbed. Just an entry in the appendix of the company's sustainability report. The news service found the company edited the website in late June, removing almost all mention of its lauded net zero goals. 5 years ago, the climate action ambitions of Google were the gold standard for big tech, but with power demand spikes from AI data centers, in July, it scrubbed its sustainability website off of its 2030 net zero pledge. This from Axios, the rate in which chatbots are spreading false information doubled in the past year, according to a report that NewsGuard shared.
Since NewsGuard's last report in August last year, AI makers have updated chatbots to respond to more prompts instead of declining to answer. Both of these changes, that and the ability to access the web for real-time info, made the bots more useful and accurate for some prompts while also amplifying potentially dangerous misinformation. The NewsGuard study is based on its AI False Claims Monitor, a monthly benchmark. It tracks whether models are getting better at spotting and debunking falsehoods or continuing to repeat them. Researchers tested 10 leading AI tools. The prompts covered politics, health, and international affairs. They used three kinds of prompts: neutral prompts, leading prompts worded in a way that assumes the false claim is true; malicious prompts aimed at circumventing guardrails in large language models; and, as I say, neutral prompts. By the numbers, false information nearly doubled from 18% to 35% in response to prompts on news topics. According to NewsGuard, inflection and perplexity most often produced false claims. Anthropic's Claude and Google's Gemini produced the least. It increased Gemini's percentage of responses containing false information from 7% to 17% in the past year. And that's the good result. From the Register, the British tech journal, job seekers who use the same AI model to compose their resumes as the model used to evaluate their applications are more likely to advance through the hiring process than those submitting human-written materials. It's according to researchers, a preprint paper from two professors. They further amplify the findings do further amplify persistent concerns about AI bias. LLMs consistently prefer resumes generated by themselves over those written by humans or produced by alternative models, even when content quality is controlled. Cute. An activist has started using artificial intelligence to identify ICE agents beneath their masks, a use of the technology sparking new political concerns over AI-powered surveillance, according to Politico. A Netherlands-based immigration activist estimates he and a group of volunteers have publicly identified at least 20 ICE officials recorded wearing masks during arrests. He told Politico his experts are able to reveal a face using AI if they have 35% or more of the face visible. ICE says its agents need to wear masks because Halloween is... No, to prevent being unfairly harassed for doing their jobs. Well, if they... Researchers at security firm Pangea have discovered a yet another way to trick large language models into ignoring their guardrails. Stick your adversarial instructions somewhere in a legal document to give them an air of unearned legitimacy. That's a trick, says the Register, familiar to lawyers the world over. The lawyers might object. Researchers say that as LLMs, large language models, move closer and closer to critical systems, understanding and being able to mitigate their vulnerabilities is getting more urgent. Research explores a novel attack, which they've dubbed legal. Is it own or pwn? That leverages the compliance requirements of LLMs with legal disclaimers and allows the attacker to execute prompt injections. Prompts are, of course, the messages you send to LLMs, telling them or asking them what you want. The legal own, I guess it's own, represents the latest form of attack. Adversarial instructions are hidden inside legal documents, carefully phrased to blend in with the legalese around them so as not to stand out. Should a human reader give it a skim, when given a prompt that requires ingestion of these legal documents, the hidden instructions come along for the ride with success in most scenarios, according to the researchers, including in live environments, including Google's Gemini. In these real-world scenarios, the injection of damaging or false material successfully bypassed AI security analysis, causing the system to misclassify the malicious code as safe. Moreover, the injection was able to escalate its impact by influencing the assistant to recommend and even execute a reverse shell on the user system when asked about the code. Anthropic's Claude, Microsoft's Phi, and Meta's Llama all rejected the malicious code. Finally, you may know this from other media. Artificial intelligence company Anthropic agreed this week to pay $1.5 billion to settle a class action lawsuit by book authors who said the company took pirated copies of their works to train its chatbot, Claude. No indication the company is having to change Claude's name. News of AI. Oh, it's great. Now the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Country music star Brian Martin was forcibly removed from the stage by police during a concert in New York this week. He was removed from the stage during a show at a Skagitoke fairgrounds in upstate New York, according to a press release from the Rensselaer County Sheriff's Office. Martin displayed, quote, signs of intoxication and erratic behavior, which ultimately required him to be removed from the stage. Due to his impaired state, he became resistant and had to be forcibly escorted out, said the sheriff's office. At first, what appeared to be an act of aggression understandably caused concern among fans and event organizers. However, in the events following the incident, Mr. Martin acknowledged he's struggling with alcoholism. That's from the sheriff's office. Then, yesterday, Martin wrote about the incident on Instagram and apologized to his fans. Sorry I let y'all down tonight. Truth is, I'm not okay. Been hitting it hard for a while and haven't took time to be honest with myself about my mental health. And it's nothing new to struggle with my anxiety and depression. He added he misses his children and family when he's on the road. Quote, lately have learned I let my fragile mind override my heart at times. And tonight it got the best of me. I apologize for the bad days, but I'm grateful for the countless good nights we've shared this year. Japan Airlines issued an apology after one of its pilots was reported to have been relieved of duty after drinking alcohol ahead of an international flight last month. Japanese Transport Ministry officials conducted a surprise investigation of the airline's headquarters. Japan Airlines declined to comment on the report of the government audit. This follows previous occurrences involving alcohol and JAL pilots, which led the airline to give assurances of stricter management oversight. Quote, we sincerely apologize to our customers and all parties involved for the inconvenience and trouble caused. We take this matter very seriously, especially considering that it occurred while we were already under administrative guidance due to multiple safety incidents, including alcohol-related cases, and we're working to prevent recurrence. This from the world of soccer. We still call it that in this country. Inter Miami striker Luis Suarez apologized for his behavior during last Sunday's League Cup final loss against the Seattle Sounders, which saw him spit on a member of the Sounders staff as he was held back by teammates. I want to apologize for my behavior when the game ended, he says. It was a moment of much tension and frustration where just after the game ended, things happened that shouldn't have happened, but that doesn't justify my reaction. I made a mistake and sincerely apologize. It's not the image I want to give in front of my family that suffers because of my mistakes, in front of my club that also doesn't deserve seeing themselves affected by something like this. I feel bad for what happened, and I didn't want to let pass the opportunity to recognize and apologize to everything that I felt bad, or to everything that felt bad for what I did, unquote. Speaking of spitting, Philadelphia defensive tackle Jalen Carter, this is in real football, apologized after he was ejected for spitting on Dallas quarterback Dak Prescott moments after the Eagles' pregame Super Bowl championship celebration. They exchanged words after the opening kickoff. Carter spit on Prescott's jersey before backing away. Prescott quickly motioned to a nearby official who threw the flag and sent Carter packing. Fans booed as he walked off slowly, holding his helmet in his hands behind his back. He apologized after the game, quote, it was a mistake that happened on my side. It won't happen again. I feel bad for just my teammates and fans out there. I'm doing it for them. I'm doing it for my family also. But the fans, they showed the most love. Prescott said he simply spit straight ahead, as he usually would, only for the saliva to land in the area near Carter, which raised the ire of his defenseman. Carter asked, You trying to spit on me? Carter could be headed toward a hefty financial penalty. And after a rocky preseason debut, the new concessions operator of the Caesars Superdome in New Orleans, where NFL player team the Saints play, is promising a better experience for Saints fans. Legends Hospitality faced a wave of complaints during the Saints' first preseason home game. The issues included slow service and poor food quality, particularly noticeable in the high-priced suites. Quote, clearly we did not meet your expectations, nor did we come close to the high standards we set for our company, said the vice president of hospitality, Lauren Fitzmaurice. The company wanted to sincerely apologize and had learned important lessons from the debacle, like maybe sell better food. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Now, the side effects of the week.
Ponvory can increase your risk of serious infections that can be life-threatening and may cause death. Ponvory can cause your heart rate to slow down, especially after you take your first dose. Do not take Ponvory if in the last 6 months you had a heart attack, unstable angina, stroke, or other severe heart conditions, including certain types of abnormal heart rhythm. The most common side effects of Ponvory include upper respiratory tract infections, elevated liver enzymes, and high blood pressure.
She sounds nice. She wouldn't hurt you. And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of the godly. Dateline Rochester, New York. The judge, Paul Warren, produced a blue shoelace at the end of the hearing in U.S. bankruptcy court. This week, it wasn't the promised blue ribbon, but it tied a bow, literal and symbolic, on the confirmation hearing that will ensure payouts to survivors of abuse and sexual abuse by priests, nuns, and church officials in the Diocese of Rochester. The agreement creates a fund of $246 million for survivors, paid out by the diocese and insurers. Has insurance for churches gone up? Inquiring minds want to know. This marked the conclusion of an arduous six-year legal battle, according to the Rochester Democrat, between survivors, the church, and its insurers. A hearing in late July was held over to September, where the judge signed the agreement to applause. I haven't forgotten what you said in your victim statements, he said. The money isn't going to fix you. It isn't going to make it go away. But the funds, the judge said, should give survivors confirmation it wasn't their fault and they didn't do anything wrong. The survivors are expected to see checks in the next 4 to 5 months. Hey, why don't you tell people you owe money to that they can expect the checks within 4 to 5 months? See what happens. This from the Catholic Herald. Cardinal Robert McElroy has moved to laicize, ouch, a priest of the Archdiocese of Washington after he published allegations of clerical sexual abuse and cover-up involving senior figures in the church. Father Michael Breeze received a letter mid-August from Cardinal McElroy, informing him that the Archdiocese was petitioning the Dicastery for the Clergy to dismiss him from the clerical state. It's not a real state. Well, it's a real state, but it's not a state of the union. The move followed a series of posts on Father Breeze's Substack, in which he accused two Washington priests, Father Adam Park and Father Carter Griffin, of sexually abusing seminarians. Well, that's what they're... He also alleged that Cardinal McElroy and his predecessor, Cardinal Wilton Gregory, had sought to conceal the charges. In his letter, Cardinal McElroy described Breeze's writings as defamatory. He had, during a meeting in late July, offered the priest the option of continuing a limited ministry to the poor if he agreed to remove his online posts. Father Breeze declined, and the cardinal said the process for his laicization would continue. He further alleged that Breeze had threatened during their conversation to, quote, bring down the church and me personally, as well as Cardinal Gregory, unquote. The priest has denied the accusations, according to the Catholic Herald, including insisting that he was raising legitimate concerns. He noted that in his letter, Cardinal McElroy did not directly rebut the substance of the allegations, or the alligators. Father Park, formerly vice rector of the Pontifical North American College in Rome, stepped down from that role 4 years ago after a former seminarian accused him of harassment. He has remained in good standing in Washington. Father Breeze has alleged that other testimonies corroborate the claims against Park and include accounts of misconduct with seminarians and others. Father Griffin, rector of the St. John Paul II Seminary, has also faced accusations from a former seminarian of inappropriate behavior when he served as vice rector. He's denied wrongdoing. At the end of August, Father Breeze replied in writing to the cardinal, again stressing that the archdiocese had failed to address the substance of his claims. He said it would be contrary to safeguarding policies for him to retract his reports. The case now goes before the Pope. Dateline Barcelona, Bolivian court sentenced Catalan Jesuits Ramon Alex and Marcos Recolons, both former provincials of the Society of Jesus, to 1 year in prison this week for covering up sexual abuse committed by the late priest Alfonso Pedrajas. Furthermore, sources from the Bolivian community of survivors said to the EFE news agency that this sentence opens the door to four more legal proceedings. According to the organization, which represents victims, there are 12 other Jesuits, also deceased, who allegedly committed sexual abuse against 500 minors in boarding schools in rural areas of Bolivia, and who allegedly enjoyed the support of then high-ranking officials of the religious order, the Society of Jesus, in the country. News of the godly. And now, finally, a little bit about microplastics. As tiny pieces of plastic clog our oceans, natural meadows of seagrass are bundling up microplastics and spitting them back out onto beaches in the form of, you're going to pardon the expression, Neptune balls. Neptune balls are round, compact bundles of seagrass, mostly found in the Mediterranean for centuries. Posidonia, their Latin name, has been used for packaging, bedding, and even insulation for houses. Researchers from the University of Barcelona found these spongy balls are spontaneously performing another function, mopping up ocean plastic from the sea floor. Although most plastic pollution originates on land, the ocean, including seagrass meadows, acts as a sink. Let that sink in. News of microplastics, ladies and gentlemen. It is, as you know, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. One thing more, a federal jury has ordered Google to pay $425 million for improperly snooping on people's smartphones during a nearly decade-long period of intrusions. Whatever happened to Don't Be Evil? Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at this same time over these same radio stations or on your audio device of choice whenever you want it. Because it's still a free, well, it's still a free radio thing. And it would be great if you joined me then. A tip of the show chapeau to the San Diego desk, to Pam Halstead and to Thomas Walsh at WWNO New Orleans for help with today's program. The email address for this thing right here, your chance to get Cars I Talk t-shirts, and a playlist of the music you hear here, along with a lot of stuff to read and watch and listen to and tell your family about, all at harryshearer.com. And I'm on Blue Sky at Harry Shearer. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of WWNO New Orleans, flagship station of the Change is Easy radio network. So long from the home of the homeless.